the glass. The left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, happy Good Friday. Happy Friday, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. We are underway on this holiday Friday from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And we got lots to talk about this hour. It is a holiday Friday, but there's a lot to get done. There's a lot to dive into as the Flames are now done their regular season and they get set for locker cleanout day on Saturday, of which we'll have all kinds of coverage for you here live on Sportsnet 960 The Fan and all over your Flames Talk podcast feed. Vix from NHL.com with us this hour on the program. Hello, sir.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm well. That was pretty fun on Thursday night.
Especially for you.
Well, it was cool to be a part of that day. I won't lie. Like it felt like a pretty neat thing to be in LA for that game and see Zane Parekh and Sam Morton and Hunter Brustevich and Idar Suniev make their debuts and just to see the I just thought it was cool to see the way the veterans treated that day and that trip as well. One of the things that not only did I pick up on, but like I was told this by coaches, by a couple of the players, when Craig Conroy joined us on Thursday's show, essentially like, yeah, that was what happened on Tuesday night was pretty devastating to the group. Like they were pretty crushed by what happened
as they should be.
And you know, when Blake Coleman told us on the post game on Tuesday that, you know, we came together at the end of that second intermission with the knowledge that they had been eliminated, and they came together, said, we owe it to our fans, we owe it to ourselves to go out there and finish strong. They did. They come back, they win that game against Vegas. That was neat to see. And then they get on that plane, they get on that bird to go to Los Angeles on Wednesday, and again, like you're pretty solemn. And they didn't take, Huberdeau didn't make the trip. Anderson didn't make the trip. Right. Hanley and Pospisil didn't make the trip, but still good chunk of veterans. Backlund was there. Uyghur was there. Coleman was there. Kadri was there. And a lot of these guys, Lomberg, so on and so forth, like still pretty crushed about not going to the playoffs and knowing that this game didn't mean anything and knowing that it was just going to be a one-day trip or a two-day trip to SoCal. Like the initial plan or the plan that they were all hoping for was to land in LA, play a meaningful game 82, beat the Kings, fly to Winnipeg. That was kind of the plan and what the Flames were going on. And then all of a sudden, you're not going to Winnipeg. Right. You're not staying over. You're coming back night of. But I really give that leadership group a ton of credit because led by the GM and led by Michael Backlund, and they said, no, we got four guys that are making their NHL debuts. We're calling up two guys. Zane and Idar have been with the team. We can't be sulking. We can't be pouting. We got to get the energy up, and we got to make it feel like a big day for these four guys. I give them a lot of credit for that. And the mood on Thursday was super upbeat. The veterans were upbeat. They were having fun. They went out for a team dinner on Wednesday, and like they really made it like, hey, this is a big opportunity. Let's go out and show these guys, pay it forward, what this is going to be like in the NHL, and let's make their NHL debuts a big thing. And then Nazem Kadri leads the way, and that shot on Sportsnet West when they showed the veterans waving at them and poking fun
at the
four guys as they went out for their solo laps was just awesome. And so I give the Flames leadership a ton of credit for making that day super special for the four players that ended up debuting. That was it was neat to be a part of, and it was neat to see how it all played itself out. Hey,
I don't know if this was the vibe in person, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it really looked like those veterans felt like proud papas of these guys getting their first NHL game. And like you mentioned, Parekh and Suniev had been around for a week and a half. Brustevich and Morton had just gotten the call up the day before. So I don't know how much the veterans, whether it Kadri, Backlund, Coleman, Lomberg, so on and so forth, knew about these kids and how much they had a chance to connect with them. But you mentioned the wave from the sort of the behind the scenes camera at these kids as they're about to make their rookie lap, their solo lap. And it just felt like there was a sense of pride in the veterans that, hey, we are going to go out here for these four guys because it is their debut. It is going to be the most meaningful game of their lives to this point. So let's try to make sure that we introduce them to the organization, to the fan base on a positive sort of strong winning note.
Would love to hear what you thought about what we saw on Thursday night in LA on the text line at 960-960. It's open to you. Four debuts. Zane Parekh scored. Sam Morton scored in their NHL debuts. Suniev and Brustevich held their own. It was a neat night. This was head coach Ryan Huska post-game following a Flames 5-1 win over the LA Kings.
A lot of exciting times today with families in town. Four young guys get the chance to play their first NHL game. It's neat to see the smiles on their faces, and even neater to see a couple of them get to score and have opportunities in this game. I thought they all did a really good job for us playing their first game, and they were factors in our win today.
Without going through every NHL debut tonight, just what did you make of the poise and just in an opportunity to get your first game and how they handled it?
I thought they all handled it really well. The one thing that stood out for me is the way they moved the puck all for them. I thought they did a really good job of moving it quickly and clean. The game didn't look too big or too much for them, which was nice to see. And as I said, I thought all four of them had impact on tonight's game.
And they did, no doubt about it. And I think the guy that everybody wants to talk about most is Zane Parekh. What a night for number 89. He was the last guy to take his solo lap. I think they did it based on age,
yes,
right? Morton, the oldest, to Parekh, the youngest. But what a night. And I don't think that's going to quiet down the Zane Parekh hype train. I saw social media as the game was going along. I don't think that the number 89 hype train is slowing down anytime soon. In fact, they may have picked up a little steam, might be going down a little incline at this point with how well he played and how noticeable he was. Did you happen to catch what Mark Messier had to say?
I did not.
Messier in the first intermission on ESPN's telecast South the Border basically said, this kid is special. I couldn't keep my eyes on him. The future's bright. Like, was raving about Zane Parekh in the first intermission. So that's pretty cool to see and pretty cool to hear. These were the final numbers for Zane Parekh. His individual numbers: 3 shot attempts, 1 scoring chance, and 1 goal. What a redirect on the one goal hit. And then absolutely leveled Blake Coleman, which was pretty funny. And then his on-ice numbers: he was a 54.2% ozone possession player at 5-on-5. Shot attempts were 13-11 Calgary when Parekh was on the ice. 3-0 goals for, and he did that all, like, they didn't shelter him. He played with ball, and he got way more D-zone starts than he got O-zone starts. 33.3% was the O-zone start ratio, so no sheltering of Zane Parekh in his NHL debut either. He spoke about it after the game on Thursday.
My first, I thought I felt comfortable right away, and, you know, I thought I'd have a lot of nerves going into this game, and, I really didn't. I didn't feel anything, you know, just a lot of adrenaline was pumping through me, and, that helped.
How much does this fire you up for the off season ahead?
Yeah, a lot. You know, I got my first taste of it, and, obviously I got to get a little bigger and a little stronger and quicker and all those things, and really excited to see how I come back.
Here were my observations on Zane Parekh, and then I'm really curious to hear how they mesh with yours, Vix, and if they're similar. First of all, the thing that stood out to me the most was how good that first pass is. His ability to get that puck off his stick and start the transition game was extremely noticeable. Behind the net, a couple of times, he hit guys so in stride and so perfectly that it kind of was a little surprising to see. There was one in the second period where he went from behind the net, kind of went side to side behind the net, hit Morgan Frost in Calgary's slot, like the right between the circles in front of Ladar, hit him so hard that I thought it was going to break Frost's stick. And I think it even shocked Frost how on the tape and zipped it was onto his stick. And then Frost in stride was out in the blink of an eye because a pass like that was so perfect. And there were 6 or 7 or 8 instances where that first pass was perfectly labeled. And I didn't know whether or not that was going to be able to translate against NHL players. And it did. And granted, all of what we're going to say here is one game. So we all know it's a small sample size. So I guess we do have to put that mandatory disclaimer on it. But that first pass was crisp and noticeable. And even, I want to say, three or four times, I don't think guys were ready for it. I think guys were a little surprised that pucks were on their sticks as accurately and quickly as they were, that I think a few times it's like, oh, geez, I wasn't ready for that to be on my stick as quickly as it was. So I thought that his passing period was at an NHL level instantly, and I thought his skating was at an NHL level without question. His offensive vision, I thought, was at NHL level. I love that his head's always up, that he's always scanning, and he's always he's always looking and looking to see what that next play is. The defensive positioning is the area that I think maybe needs the most work. There were a few times when he and Ball were skating back and going into defensive posture. I think he's so used to, in the Ontario League, shading to the puck regardless, because he's so much better than everybody, that he shades the puck and takes over. So whether he's on, like, he's a right defenseman, but that puck's on his D partner's side, he's going over to get it because he's a better skater. He's a better outlet. He's the guy that's going to start the transition. Whereas in the NHL, well, Kevin Ball holds his own, right? And doesn't need Parekh to go get the puck when it's on his side. And so a couple of times you saw that and it put him out of position. And then he realized, oh, geez, I've got a pretty good D partner with him, and then scrambled back. A couple of times he could have put himself out of position, jumping into the rush or pinching deep. And even when he made those decisions, I thought he did a good job of not being over aggressive on him, and was able to recognize when it was time to jump back and get back into his position or his natural spot. There's still some defensive work, as we all know, but it wasn't because of laziness. It wasn't because of wanting to cheat for offense. It was more just, hey, we all know the book on him when he was drafted is this kid has got next level offensive vision, next level offensive ability, but the defensive work needs some work. And that continues to be the case. But I didn't find like it was a huge problem either. Like, yes, does it need work? But did I find that it was massively detrimental to the team or led on a regular basis to good opportunities for the other side? No, I didn't, Vic. So those were kind of my observations. And I know that, you know, we're talking to a guy who runs FC hockey. I like that you were going into scout mode the game. So I'm curious as to what you saw and how on the same page we are about something.
Yeah, we're on the same page about a lot of it. I will preface what I say with this. Seeing something in person and seeing it on TV are entirely two different endeavors, even when you're scouting, especially when you're scouting, because you can only see what the camera shows you. Starting off, and in his first two or three shifts, I thought it was a real good education for Zane in learning a bit how time and space evaporates at the NHL level, because I do think he was rushed a couple times. I do think there were some errant passes that he thought he had a lane, and then magically they were cut off and picked off and resulted in a turnover. Sort of similar in a sense to Matt Coronato learning how to get his shot off at the NHL level, how that half second can make the difference between getting your puck off your stick onto your teammate's stick, or in Matt Coronado's case was getting a shot on net. Learning how passing lanes evaporate faster. Having said all that, I didn't notice too much of that after those first three shifts. Like, I started making my notes and, okay, this happened once. Let's see how many more times it happens. Is this a one-off, two-off, or is this going to be a running theme? No, his ability to learn on the fly, and we saw him on the bench numerous times on the broadcast with an iPad and evaluating what had just happened and, okay, what worked, what didn't work, why didn't it work? So to me, he was very much a student in that NHL debut. And you mentioned his passing first and foremost. It cracks off his stick and onto his teammate's stick.
Like, yeah.
He doesn't pass to pass. He passes to put it through your blade, because if there is a defender in the way and you need to go through him, that pass has almost enough zip on it that even if there is somebody in the lane, it's going to get through. Like, he passes with authority. He passes with intention. When he decides that he's going to move the puck to a teammate, he is not like 50% committed to it. He's 110% committed to it with how he snaps it off. And I agree with your scanning with his head up. The thing that I really appreciate about that the most is he's so confident in his puck handling that he doesn't need to look down. He knows where the puck is at all times when he's in possession. He doesn't have to look up, see who's open, look down to make sure that the puck's still on his blade, and then execute something. His hands and his confidence with the puck are absolutely through the roof. And the one thing that I thought got better throughout the game as well is his panic threshold when he had the puck in the defensive zone. He was able to still make plays and spin away from the forecheck or away from players. And he wasn't just dumping it off and getting rid of it because, oh, this is an NHL forechecker coming in at me. This is, you know, Byfield. This is Kopitar. This is Fiala, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
There was a lot of poise and a lot of, oh, I don't need to really panic because I'm confident enough in my skills that even though this is my first 20 minutes in the NHL, I know what my skill set is and I know where my tools are. And I've already learned what the pace is like. I've adjusted to it. I've managed to get a sense of, okay, this player is X feet away from me. How quickly can he close in? Because it's absolutely night and day in comparison to the Ontario Hockey League level. It's just the thing that I came away impressed with the most is how he took those early game lessons. And then by midway mark of the first period or, you know, the last 5 minutes of the first period, all those things that I kind of had a question mark about, he had already adjusted his game to get used to what life would be like at the NHL level.
Got belted a couple of times too. Yep. Hopped, and not only did he hop right back up, he hopped back up, shook it off, and immediately both times he got belted, got back into the rush and got back into the play immediately, which I also thought was a positive sign because, you know, one of the guys that I think he'll be compared to going forward is Lane Hutson, who just finished an incredible rookie campaign and could very well be the rookie of the year. And one of the things that was worrisome for some about Hutson was his frame. Not a big guy, not a overly like imposing figure. And, you know, what about the rigors of an 82-game campaign? Well, he seemed to do just fine with the rigors of an 82-game campaign, despite not being the largest human being. And Zane's the same way. Not the biggest guy, but he's shifty. He is able to deal with
content. He puts his
heels
together and opens his hips.
Yeah.
You can hit him, but he'll still just spin off with,
exactly,
with the way he can do his footwork and the way he can open up his hips. So I'm not even necessarily worried so much about the punishment he's going to take. The thing that I would identify
and I do think that the fact that, hey, he got belted twice and didn't phase him at all, that gave me a little bit more confidence that if he's ready to play next year, then we could see him play for all 82.
And the only thing I would say on that front is he does still need to get stronger. That's obvious. What 20-year-old, 19-year-old doesn't need to, especially as a defenseman trying to make their way from the junior ranks to the NHL ranks. He's got the frame to do it. Like, he's 6 feet. Like, Lane Hutson comes in at what, 5'9", 5'10", is even 5'8"? Whereas Parekh still is going to have sort of the height advantage on that, where if he can add a bit more muscle, and I'm not asking him to bulk up because I think you run the risk of, you know, going maybe the Patrick Saloff route where he was too big, I think, for his size, and it starts to limit some of the things that Parekh would be able to do. But if he could add just a little bit
also
more strength.
Also, don't concuss your teammates in practice either. That's also a good
That was
lesson.
A scrimmage, was it not?
Yeah, a scrimmage, whatever. Don't concuss your teammate
in
training camp.
Valid
That's also
point.
A good lesson for Zane Parekh.
Yeah, please don't do that the next time you have the opportunity to. Well, thank goodness, knock wood, Blake Coleman.
Yeah, good point.
So, I mean, maybe not the best thing for you to bring up at this point, but no, everything that
Coleman's
I kind of...
Coleman's fine. Everything, joke about it on
social. Yeah. Everything that I saw that maybe made me want to go, okay, let's flag that for later in Zane Parekh, he had cured within, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes of actual game time.
And I think that when you start to translate and project to next season and next training camp, like, I don't think the hype train is going to slow down at all. We'll see if Zane joins the Wranglers for their playoff run. We'll see if he gets some American League time in. That'll be interesting to see. I think they could use it. I mean, the Wranglers could use him. But, you know, I think there's kind of two schools of thoughts. One of the things that Zane talked about coming into Penticton, I think it was you who asked him about, like, you've barely had time to blink between World Junior Camp and the draft and going deep all the way to winning the Memorial Cup and all of what went into last year for him. Maybe the Flames and Zane decide that, hey, let's not, you know, you played your full season, you played playoffs, you got your NHL debut, that's enough. Now let's get your offseason program underway. So I think there are some different schools of thought in terms of the way they go about that. But I don't think the excitement level either way is going going to be dampened when it comes to Parekh for next year. And when Craig Conroy joined us on Thursday's show, we asked him about just that. I mean, okay, it's a little early and there's a lot of things that go into it, but next year, OHL, NHL, can't play in the American League. And I know there's a lot of confusion. It's like, why can he play in the AHL now, but not next year? If you really want to know, I'll tell you another time, but that he can play in the American League if the Flames want for the rest of this season, but he cannot play next year in the American League until after the NHL and or the CHL season is done. But this was Craig Conroy when talking about that, you know, not ideal situation, but a situation that they need to deal with.
We all know he's got to either play in the CHL or he's got to play in the NHL. So I want him, you know, definitely my idea or what I'm hoping, but I don't want to, you know, put the cart before the horse is, you know, you want him to play. I mean, I don't know what more he could possibly do in the CHL. Yep. But I don't want to put him in a situation where he's not ready to play in the NHL. So it's one of those, you know, rules that maybe you wish you could change a little bit where he could play in the American League, but it isn't. So those are the only two options we have. And, you know, I think tonight's going to give us I'm not going to say this game's going to say he's going to play next year or not. It's just good to see kind of where he slots in at this point.
I don't think it dampens the enthusiasm or the optimism that Craig Conroy and the Flames would have about him playing next year. We'll see what happens in the offseason with Rasmus Anderson and Joel Hanley and what they decide to do with some of their defensemen they have some decisions on. I don't know if there's any doubt about it that they there's a pending decision in the next year and a bit when it comes to Rasmus. Joel Hanley's a pending unrestricted free agent. They've got a contract to figure out when it comes to Kevin Ball. So, you know, they've got some things to figure out, but I think the ideal situation based on the unideal circumstances would be Zane Parekh in the NHL next year and plays in the NHL all next year. And whether that's the Leo Carlson route where they do some load management and hold him out for some games here and there or not, I think the ideal situation would be they feel Parekh is ready enough to be in the NHL and he can develop in the NHL. And I think more and more we're seeing the National Hockey League become a development league. It's more a development league now than it ever has been. And teams are, again, Lane Hudson's a great example. Like there, 10 years ago, Lane Hudson wouldn't have been in the NHL this year. I think that they would have gone another route and over-marinate and all that type of stuff. That's not the way it works anymore, or it works that way less so now because of salary cap implications and the importance of getting the most out of your entry-level deals, all those types of things. So I do think that the ideal situation would be him playing all season in the NHL next year. I think that's what the Flames would like to see. I think that's what the Flames will be kind of angling at in terms of the way they use him in training camp in the preseason. And my read is that unless Zane Parekh proves he's not ready to be in the NHL, like unless it is so evident through training camp in the preseason, like it was this year.
That might even still take till January before they make the move on that, too. You spot start him, like you say, see if he makes progress, send him to the World Juniors, and then decide from there. But to be perfectly honest,
I just think that when it's all said and done, unless he proves that he is clearly not ready to be in the NHL, they'll err on the side of keeping him in the NHL.
As it stands on Friday, April 18th, the last place. I preface this with I'm not a development coach. I've never been a coach at any level. But from a development standpoint, the Ontario Hockey League is, from my perspective, again, I'm not referencing anybody else, but that's the worst place for his development from here on out. What else is he going to learn? What else is he going to prove at the OHL level with Saginaw? He's already scored 30 goals in back-to-back seasons. He put up 107 points as two of the top three productive seasons by a defenseman since 94-95. Yeah, he can go back there and work in his defensive game, but it's just going to stagnate the rest of his development in the other areas. I hate to say it, but this is one of those instances, and Craig Conroy referenced it. If you could ever just have one player in the CHL be exempt from that rule, Zane Parekh is just the most obvious candidate I've seen in some time.
Let's hit the text line at 960-960. Obviously, it's a holiday Friday, so live listening a little bit less so than normal. But if you are listening live, text line open, 960-960. Jeff in Vancouver says, I'll admit, after this year, it doesn't take much squinting to see how this model of veterans ushering in a wave of young players can constitute a successful retool. Also, Zane's defense looked very good to me. Even if it is as unconventional as his offensive skill. Also, I wonder what the actual pitch from management would be to Vladar to get him to stay. That's a topic that we can get to on Vladar another day, but that's another interesting topic for the offseason. Murray and the Ranchlands, despite missing the playoffs by a point, that game last night was awesome and has me feeling good about this season and the future. This reads, it's unbelievable the Blues went on such a crazy winning streak right at the end of the season. If not for that, they would have made it in easily. And finally from Wedley and Bridalwood, who says, great job on color, Pat. What was that info you had on Ball and Zane? My Walkman had cut out. Walkmans are a very, very reliable piece of technology. So it must have been your fault, Wedley.
Tape it off the radio? Pop in a cassette.
Remember the old yellow Walkmans with the
Shockwave?
Well, those were Discmans.
Oh, my bad.
Panasonic?
That's right. That is a Discman, not a Walkman.
Yeah, but the Walkman, like, hook it to your
belt clip.
Hook it to your belt clip, put on your roller skates, little over the head headphones, like the as flimsy as like a cord. Anyway, the info on this came from a Twitter user. I just went and double checked it just to see the historic on it. So Kevin Ball is of mixed descent and including Indian descent, and Zane Parekh is of Korean and Indian descent. And so Parekh and Ball became the first teammates ever in the NHL of Indian descent, which was pretty cool. And even cooler to see them on a pairing.
Yeah.
Not only was it the first teammates, also the first defense pairing made up of two players of Indian descent. And I just think, you know, as the NHL really tries to become a more diverse space, and as hockey period tries to become, and as we in the hockey world try to make it a more diverse space, I just thought that was really cool to see. And both guys playing like high level roles, and it was and neat to see them play so well as a pairing. But that was the info I had thrown out on Thursday night about Parekh and Ball.
Well, and potentially they could be a more long term pairing down the road should things hit properly.
Couple other texts. I agree, by the way. I think that could very well be a long-term pairing. I'm hoping that to be the case. Sean and Kevin both asked similar questions. Sean says, why can't they get Zane to play NCAA? He could do 1 or 2 years of college, get a little bit of a different development path. And Kevin says, is NCAA an option for Parekh? In both cases, it's not an option. What happened was Parekh signed before the CHL NCAA rule got amended. And so it was a couple months afterwards. And essentially what happened was the NCAA opened it up so that players playing in the CHL could come to play in the NCAA. Prior to that, the NCAA looked at the CHL as a professional league because certain guys get stipends here and there. And the NCAA, prior to the NIL, the name, image, likeness rule, the NCAA was so strict about, you cannot receive a single dollar.
You can't profit.
You are a strict amateur and amateur only. And they, for whatever reason, like decades overdue, but they were still so hung up on the integrity of amateurism while these schools pulled in billions of dollars off the backs of the athletes and they got incredible facilities, full ride scholarships, all that type of stuff. But these guys couldn't work. And some, you know, depending on what sport you were in, you know, some guys had trouble making ends meet and all that type of stuff. And so the NIL, and also it deprived guys of making money that they deserve to make. Like there are some college athletes are bigger names than, you know, 70% of professional athletes, depending on what sport they play. Anyway, that's a rant that doesn't matter. Because the NIL came into play, they decided that, looking at the CHL as a professional league is rather archaic at this point. They opened it up so that CHL players could come to the NCAA, but they couldn't. You still can't be signed to a pro contract and play in the NCAA. And Parekh had signed his pro contract, so he is not eligible to play in the NCAA, which is a little unfortunate in terms of the timing. Yeah. Henry Muse, forever, same draft. Henry Muse has not signed his NHL contract, and that's why he's eligible to go play at Michigan.
Yeah, that would be perhaps, well, I think it'd be tricky because I do wonder if that would be the preferred path or if the Calgary Flames,
I'm not saying it would be,
honestly would want to get them, yeah, because you're still turning over development cues to an NCAA program. Not to put the cart before the horse because it was just one game sample size, but I wonder if, because he can't come to training camp if he's going to the NCAA next year, he'd miss training camp, he'd miss Penticton, so he wouldn't get that evaluation of where he is now and then go, okay, we're going to drop you into an NCAA program. So might work out for the best. We'll find out.
Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, happy Friday. And can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Temporary final Daily Flames Roundtable of the week, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport at Steinberg. Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Now joined by Derek Wills to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday. 82 down this regular season. The season now officially over after Thursday's 5-1 win over the LA Kings. And now, next up, kind of the official close to the season will be locker cleanout day Saturday at the Dome, bright and early Saturday at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. We'll hear from a number of Flames players, ask some questions, who's injured, world championships, contract status, all that type of stuff. We'll start to get some answers to on Saturday at locker cleanout day. So knowing that, gentlemen, what's kind of like the number one thing you're interested in finding out, or the number one thing you're interested in hearing, the number one thing that you'll go into locker cleanout day wanting some sort of clarity or answer on?
Before I answer that question, can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
Does it feel like the season's over?
Honestly, for me, it does now.
Once tomorrow's done, I think it'll feel, or once we're there on closure Saturday, I think it'll feel kind of like it's over. But as of right now, kind of just feels like you're still in the routine, hey?
It really does. And when you think about how busy the Flames were, so they had 21 games in 42 days before the Four Nations break, and then 27 games in 54 days after the break. And literally every single one of those games, except for game 82, was meaningful. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that their season has come to an end. I guess tomorrow will definitely help when you see guys leaving the rink for the final time this season, and you know, hearing from players and coaches and managers about what went right, what went wrong this season. I guess that will be, in a way, closure for me. But it was such a fun season. And when I think about tomorrow and what I'm hoping to hear or expecting to hear, I'm expecting to hear that a number of guys were playing through probably fairly significant injuries. And I suspect Rasmus Anderson's injury was one that, if the Flames weren't in a push for a playoff spot until game number 81, would have held him out of the lineup. And I give him a lot of credit for pushing through and playing through pain, obviously. I think it really impacted his mobility. And you know, he probably took some heat that he didn't necessarily deserve because of what he was playing through. So that would be one thing for me. And, you know, hearing if there were maybe some other guys who were playing through something. I do wonder about Jonathan Huberdeau, guys, because he had a fantastic season, but his production definitely dipped in the final 8 or 10 games and didn't play in game number 82. So I suspect he might have been playing through something. And I'm almost 100% sure that Martin Pospisil was, because he was so effective for so long, even though he wasn't producing offensively. Just his physicality, he sets a franchise record for most hits in a season, and he was a difference maker down the stretch. So I suspect those three guys were probably playing through something, and I'm guessing some other guys were as well. So I guess anxious to hear just how tough these guys were playing through all of those various injuries in the push for a playoff spot. And then anxious to hear how everybody feels about what happened this season. I mean, I can sit here and say that I'm proud of what the Flames accomplished this season. I really am. Expectations were super low. Let's not forget they were 31st in Sportsnet's preseason power rankings. So not only did they exceed expectations, I mean, they greatly exceeded expectations this season. But how are the managers, coaches, and players feeling? We heard a little bit after game number 81. I think the sentiment was that, yeah, you know, we didn't get to where we wanted to go, and that's to the Stanley Cup playoffs, but we're pretty proud of what we accomplished this season. So just anxious to hear how they're feeling now that they've had a few days to digest being eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think there's a lot to be proud of, and I think there's a lot to build on, guys.
Selfishly, and since Pat had already mentioned it, I'm curious to see who goes or who's able to go represent their country at the World Championship. That's always a...
Okay. Is that because you're going?
Yeah, it is because I'm going. And I only even brought it up because Pat already did, because I know he was going to sit across from me at this table and go, okay. And true to form, Pat Steinberg always delivers. You touched on it too, Willsy, the injury situation surrounding the Flames. It's always a curious one for me. And one that I try to keep more cognizant of after Andrew Mangiapane's off year a couple seasons ago, where as soon as the season ends, all of a sudden it's like, oh, scheduled to undergo surgery. You talk to him at the end of August at the Italian Open. It's like, oh yeah, I got hurt in game three and my shoulder kept coming in and out all throughout the season. So I try not to be so quick to judge performances because we don't know the medical status of a lot of players. Rasmus Anderson included, because I think he's taken a lot of heat, especially when it comes to his plus minus. Wouldn't surprise me one bit, of, like you mentioned, Willsy, if this was a team that wasn't in a competitive situation, he would not have been in the lineup. We'll find out about that and a whole host of other players. And then, again, I want to kind of see who firmly reiterates that they are a part of this process. And the one thing that kind of caught me after game 81 was Nazem Kadri going, yeah, the older guys, you feel for them because you don't get too many more cracks at this. I wonder if anybody's opinion or commitment has changed knowing that.
You bring up some of those names, Willsy, like it's a little telling that two of those guys, Huberdeau and Pospisil, had the opportunity to play 82 of 82 and still didn't go on the trip. So that's a pretty good tell, because playing 82 is a nice little carrot for a lot of guys.
It's important to those guys.
Exactly. And, you know, it was cool to see Kadri and Coleman get to 82 games, but Huberdeau and Pospisil could have hit 82 and didn't make the trip, which is, I think, somewhat indicative that they were absolutely playing through something. You know, the only thing I'll add is that I'm curious, I guess, to hear, because we know the question's going to be asked by one of us about, you know, how do you feel, for instance, on Rasmus Anderson? How are you feeling about, you know, your contract status? You'll be entering the final year of a contract. What's your belief level in wanting to re-sign, and what's your feeling going into negotiations starting on July 1st, all that type of stuff? And, you know, I think I got a pretty good read on what Raz is going to say, but you never know. Like, nobody was expecting 2 years ago Michael Backlund to give us the, like, how shocking was Michael Backlund prior to being named captain a few months later saying, I don't know, guys. Like, I want to win a Stanley Cup. I don't know what I want to do. And so, you know,
different coach, boys.
Absolutely. And I'm not really expecting to hear anything like that, but that always just gives me a little bit of a, okay, you know, Raz was pretty open on Tuesday ahead of the Vegas game with some of the things 90%. He was saying. So yeah, 90%, open up your wallet, all that type of stuff. So I'm curious to hear what we hear from Raz. And the other guy I'm really interested in hearing from, and kind of maybe we have to read between the lines, maybe we don't, but like, what does Dan Vladar say to us when we ask him about his desire to want to re-sign here? Because the way I understand it is that it's kind of up to Dan in terms of what he and his camp want to do and what they prioritize in terms of, you know, the next couple of years. Does he want to stay in a place he's comfortable with, place that likes him? He likes it here. he and Dustin Wolf work well together, and he'll get guaranteed playing time, but he'll be getting guaranteed playing time behind Dustin Wolf on the depth chart, or is there somewhere that they identify that maybe there is more of a tandem situation where maybe he could start closer to 50% of the games instead of, you know, 30 or 35% of the games like what he might get next year with Wolf a part of the equation? You know, I thought Kevin Woodley brought up a really interesting point on Thursday. He's like, what about New Jersey? Does he go back and join Jacob Markstrom? Jake Allen's almost certainly leaving. You know, Markstrom has injury history. They need him to sometimes be rested. Would Vladar look at New Jersey as a possible place to play and get more playing time, so on and so forth? So I just want to hear what we get from Dan Vladar, because I think if the Flames had their druthers, they'd love to bring him back for another year or two. They'd love to bring him back similar to the contract he's on right now, like somewhere in that $2 to $2.5 million AAV. And if you could get him on that for a year or two, and the Vladar camp was cool with doing that, I think that that'd be a really good fit from a team perspective. But, you know, how much does the Vladar camp want to chase some potential added playing time elsewhere? So I'd add just what do we hear from Rasmus, and what do we hear from Dan Vladar? Those are a couple things I'll be interested in hearing from as well.
Yeah, and the thing about Rasmus is, you know, he's going to be honest. He's not just going to throw one cliche after another at us. And so I'm anxious to hear from him as well. On the Dan Vladar front, guys, I must admit, I'm a big fan of him as a person. I had a lot of great chats with him over the course of the season. And the sense I got, and this could change depending on what other teams do and what other teams' needs are and who signs where, but the sense that I got is that his preference is to stay with the Flames, understanding that Dustin Wolf is going to be this team's number one goaltender, and he's going to be the number two. But I think they really built a strong relationship over the course of this season. And I think if everything were to work out for both the team and the player, I think he'd like to stay. That's the sense I get. It's a pretty strong sense, but things could always change. And yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing from the players. And sometimes they'll surprise you and be more honest than they usually are, because they have to be careful with what they say with social media and the radio and television. Things can blow up pretty quickly these days. So I understand why they are. But I'm really looking forward to hearing from Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska. I want to hear from the head coach about where he feels the team is at and where there's room for growth next season. And I want to hear from the general manager. Has the plan changed at all? Like, they've really never called it a rebuild. Maybe on occasion we've heard retool. But with the success the Flames had this season, 96 points, tied for the most by a non-playoff team in NHL history, are they going to alter the plan at all? And when I say that, I'm not suggesting that they're going to go out and spend all of their available cap space on 35-year-old unrestricted free agents. That's not what they should do. That's not what they're going to do. But do they think they're maybe a little bit further ahead than they were going to be? And if so, how does that change their approach during the offseason? And again, I don't think they're going to try to get a lot older, but does that change the approach? Aren't you guys wondering that?
Yeah, I'm curious as to, like, every read that I get is that the long-term getting younger plan is still the most important. Now, I think if, you know, I really think if Sam Bennett hits free agency, that the Flames will make a concerted push to see if they can bring him in, because they feel like Bennett as a center, I think they feel like he would be a perfect fit with this team going forward, whether you pair him back with Huberdeau or whatever the case may be. So I think there might be a free agent, a bigger name free agent or two, like at Rantanen hit the market. They would have gone hard after him as well. And I don't know what the chances are of a Bennett, or had Rantanen gotten there, if a Rantanen coming here. But I do think that they'll try to see if there's a free agent that they could bring in to really help fill a hole for the time being. But I still think like we're talking about some pretty pragmatic decisions that I think they're going to lean towards making, you know, with Zane Parekh and what he did on Thursday night, but also what he's done all season and what he projects to be as a potential phenom in this league. And with some of the other impressive young talent they've got coming, I still wonder if getting younger and keeping the doors open for some of those young players is going to be the number one priority. Like, I don't know if we see because a decade ago at this time, all of a sudden a pivot was happening, right? They made the playoffs, they get to round two, and
rebuild's over.
The next thing you know, and they did pivot, like they did change course, and it went from a longer term plan to we're ready to go. And next thing you know, they're trading away multiple picks for Dougie Hamilton and making other kind of right now moves. And I don't actually criticize the Hamilton move that much because he fit their age.
He was pretty young.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I think he was 23 at the time when they brought him in. So that one wasn't. But it kind of signified or signaled what was to come next. And then we really saw them starting to trade away picks like Brian Elliott and Travis Hamonic and all these different guys that Tree started to try to chase chase the right now. I don't think we're going to see a big pivot there. And I still think, at least in my opinion, guys, I still think that's the most important part, that even because internally they were ahead of expectations this year and internally they were closer to being a playoff team and closer to being a really competitive group in the West than I think even they thought they were going to be, I still don't think it's going to be a hard pivot in terms of, you know, where they're going or accelerating their plan.
Yeah, and do I think they're going to go out and sign a Troy Brower type to a 4-year, $18 million deal? No. But would they package picks, maybe a prospect or two, to get a guy like Bowen Byram? Just throwing a name out there. You know, a guy who is already established
that
as
I can
an NHLer.
See for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Would they have a lot of draft capital, guys. Would they potentially trade some of that draft capital? Would they trade those lottery tickets to get players from, I don't know, 20 to 26? You know, guys in the same age range as Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost. I do wonder about that because they've got so many draft picks. They've got so much cap space. There are going to be other teams, even with the cap going up, that are in a cap crunch that maybe have to move guys that they don't want to move. Can the Flames fill some holes with more known quantities, guys who have already played in this league and you've got a better idea of what they are, as opposed to just, you know, sitting back and using all the draft picks they have and then hoping 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, those guys turn into something. I mean, that's probably the approach I would take. So I'm anxious to hear from Craig Conroy, and, you know, he probably can only share so much with us, but I'm anxious to hear what the general manager would like to do during the offseason.
I do think if, like, say that they do end up having to move Erasmus Anderson, if that becomes something that they believe is the right call, I think that type of player coming back would be one of the things they would really prioritize. And that's kind of, you know, from Frost and Farabee to Ball and Sharon Govich, that's been part of the plan the entire time. So I think they would absolutely be open to that. And I don't know, you know, whether Byram would be a great fit. You know, what a perfect left shot guy that you could bring in and instantly fit in this organization. Like, oh, you need a long-term partner for Mackenzie Weegar? How about Bowen Byram? That sounds pretty good. Yeah. And you need a long-term partner for Zane Parekh? Well, how about Kevin Ball? That seems like a pretty good top four going forward. And I think that, you know, if a center iceman or a potential center iceman was out there, I think they'd be interested in trying something similar like that as well. And that's one of the reasons why they accumulated all those draft picks, is not just to make all the picks. And in 2024, what, they made 10 picks? They had 9, they ended up making 10 in Las Vegas. And sometimes that'll happen and they'll be happy to make all their picks. But if they do end up packaging one or two here or there, yeah, I could absolutely see that happening once again.
And I think they're in a great spot because they exceeded expectations this season, despite having the second most cap space in the NHL. And they had a number of veterans who maybe weren't playing to their potential, who suddenly found their games again. And you have to be, you know, thinking that Jonathan Huberdeau can probably pick up where he left off, and maybe some other guys as well. But also because I think Craig Conroy's done such a good job accumulating draft capital and salary cap space. I just think that gives him and the Flames so much flexibility with their plan moving forward. Guys, I think there's a happy medium between, you know, trading away veteran players to get picks and prospects back and going really young. So can you find a happy medium where you get younger but not super young? And when I say super young, I mean just by acquiring draft picks and players who aren't NHL ready. Is there a happy medium in there somewhere? I guess it's a question we'll have to ask tomorrow and see if we can get a good answer.
Yep. All right, we will see you bright and early on a Saturday morning. Thank you, Willsy.
Okay, guys, have a good weekend.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Shan Virgie, Taylor Dingman, not Taylor Hughes, but Taylor Dingman, have been our outstanding producers this hour. And that'll do it for the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport.